Hey Liverpool fans, have you seen the latest release? At Anfield Index, we've teamed up with Liverpool FC to announce that the brand new 24-25 LFC Nike home kit and anthem jacket are out now, and they're hotter than ever. The brand new kit pays homage to the legendary Rome 1984 side, featuring sleek pinstripe detailing that brings a touch of history to our modern game. Whether you're cheering from the cop or watching from home, you'll feel the spirit of the Reds coursing through every stitch. The best part? You can grab yours today. The new kit and training range are available in official stores, online, and through the LFC store app. Don't wait, order now and be ready to show your Liverpool pride and style. Get your hands on the new 24-25 LFC home kit and anthem jacket today. Let's make this season unforgettable. You'll never walk alone.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights.
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, and welcome to another episode of Media Matters for Anfield Index. It's a weird time, isn't it, ladies and gentlemen? You can spin positives, you can spin negatives. You might just feel a bit meh, as it were, but there's plenty to analyse as ever, on the pitch, off the pitch, and everything coming up in the short-term, long-term fallouts and recriminations. And here to join me as ever is the renowned and the respected David Lynch. And I'm going to ask you a bit differently, because normally I'll always ask you, David, how you are, but it feels a bit weird at this moment in time. I mean, the way you put everything together, we've got the slot news, we've had the Derby disaster, we've had the weekend and everything that's going on. What kind of is your overriding emotion right now on this whole situation?
Yeah, I think because the slot news is thrown in there, and it kind of makes you a little bit more sort of, you know, you're looking forward to looking to the future a little bit more already, because this is very much kind of fizzling out this season. There's not a lot to play for. And so, yeah, it's probably done Arne Slot a little bit of a favour, actually, this run, in that it is making us all sort of look towards that, what that might be like, and almost adding a layer of excitement to it, because this has been a little bit of a, you know, a really disappointing run, and obviously the mood's down. But I think it does kind of help it in a way, really, that you know, there is change coming, things are going to be slightly different. And also, we really shouldn't sort of get too far away from the fact that this has actually been a decent season. It's ending in disappointing fashion, but the fact is that the primary aims have been achieved, and as I say, probably shouldn't get too far away from that, because, you know, it's easy to get bogged down by the negativity. And I tweeted at full time, kind of regretted it, actually, saying, you know, the upside of that is that it's one game close to the end of the season. But the reality is we're coming to the end of Jurgen Klopp's reign, and we should actually be relishing this and enjoying it. And, you know, particularly because, as I say, those aims have been achieved, and it's only because we recalibrated what we thought the season was going to be a few months back that we feel so disappointed now. But I think the reality is that, you know, it's we're not too far away from what even those recalibrated aims were either. I mean, we're only 5 points behind Arsenal at the minute, by the way. But obviously, I don't expect Liverpool to go on and win the title now, but it gives you an idea. The gap isn't that big. It's just that they've run out of games now to close it. So, you know, it shouldn't be too much on the negative side of things, even though I can understand why people are getting dominated or felt they feel that emotion primarily at times.
Yeah, it is understandable, and it does feel like almost on the dawn of something. And I mean, I'll take you back to Saturday lunchtime. It was an interesting game. I noticed the BT commentators were trying to hype it up, but it did have that feeling of like, have either teams got much to play for realistically in the whole grand scheme of thing? But there you go. I mean, probably a loaded question this, but what did you make of our overall performance on Saturday?
Yeah, I thought first half really flat, but so were West Ham, by the way. I know they take a lead into half time, but I kind of thought it was amusing, actually. You listen to the TNT commentary, and it was kind of like, oh, well, you know, Liverpool are in a title race. West Ham are pushing for Europe. Why is it so flat? Why is the game so poor? And it's like, well, Liverpool realistically aren't pushing for the title anymore. That had basically been ended already. And West Ham's hopes of getting into Europe were very slim anyway as well. Their chance of pushing up the table looked very unlikely. And it was a 12:30 kickoff, which, you know, TNT might want to look at themselves about why the atmosphere was crap, why the play was terrible when everyone's eating pasta for the breakfast and got very little to play for. So it's not really a big surprise there wasn't much zip in the play. And I thought it was a largely even first half. I thought, well, I say even actually, I thought Liverpool had the better of it and didn't take the rare sort of moments of opportunities that they had. But obviously it wasn't a fluent performance by any means. Yeah. And then you can see from a corner and that's extremely disappointing. But I was buoyed by the second half performance, you know, for all the talk that the fight has gone out of this side and they're ready to wave the white flag. They actually performed much better in the second half, didn't they? And probably deserved to win the game. But again, you know, it's been the theme of recent weeks, moments of sloppiness, hasn't it? And that sort of preceded the equaliser. And in the end, you know, Liverpool pushed, don't they? But I think, you know, can't be too disappointed to come away with a point because, as I say, if you're going to have moments of sloppiness, you're going to get punished in at this level. And as I say, that's the theme of recent weeks. So, you know, I'm sure there would have been a bit more of a concerted push to win it if there would be more at stake. But it's just, you know, like I say, the season's kind of fizzling out. You take the point. It's a point away from home. It's not another defeat and just move on, really.
Yeah, it's just the theme, isn't it? Wastefulness at one end, sloppy at the other, and it gets punished either way, doesn't it? But yeah, a point and we move on type of thing. I mean, maybe I'm asking this the wrong way because I know we talk about man of the match. Do you think there was any who, again, it wasn't a brilliant performance, but sort of stood out or did well that you'd credit for Saturday?
Yeah, I really like what Gravenberch did. Thought he was really, really good. I think for him as well, these few games are kind of important, you know. I know obviously he's got a Dutch manager coming in who will know him really well, but it's helpful, isn't it, to sort of make his case to feature a bit more next season, to play well in this sort of final run in. And I think he's not done himself any harm at all. I mean, I did think he'd be kind of a slow burner this season because he's massive, isn't he? And I think we forget that he's 21 years old because physically he doesn't look it. But what I've loved about this sort of some of his performance towards the back end of the season is he's putting both sides of it together. So winning the most duels on the pitch, you know, I think was it 9 out of 13 he wins in the end. He's doing the defensive stuff and he, you know, which is really impressive. But also he hasn't lost that element that Liverpool signed him for, which is, you know, he completes 7 out of 8 dribbles, which again, that's the thing he's got, the X factor he's got over a lot of Liverpool's midfielders. His dribbling is unbelievable. And that was the thing immediately when he came in, you could see was going to be special about him. And so the fact he's retained that and he's also, you know, putting in the defensive work and winning his battles in central midfield, I think that's really encouraging. And I know some people are kind of down on Gravenberch, but as I say, he's a young player, I think, with a lot to give. And, you know, I don't really understand why he's been written off so early. And I think a lot more to come from him. And I think he really showed against West Ham that he can do both sides of the game. And that's, yeah, a new manager coming in who I'm sure will really like him. I think that's, you know, really, really encouraging. And one of the positives you can take from this little run, I think he's been quite good.
He has, yeah, to be fair, done it. Probably the only disappointment, I think, he comes away on Saturday, does have a couple of good chances, doesn't he? That volley that he kind of hits almost, I don't know if he hits it too well, too powerfully is the right phrase. And he seemed to get in a great position, but tries a strange little flick almost, doesn't he, with the outside of his boot when in the air. Do you think he will look back and think, should have had a goal there, realistically?
Oh, no doubt about it. But again, these are moments that, you know, a little bit more composure in particularly with the one he flicks. I mean, he probably could have took that one down and give himself 5 seconds to put it in the net. So those are it's composure, isn't it, in those moments when you're, you know, big moments in games. And I think, again, it's a young player. You know, there's not many 21-year-olds have the presence of mind to think
True.
that they've got that space. So I think that's there's definitely elements of his game that are going to have to improve and will improve. But as I say, I'm so encouraged by the positives I'm seeing at the moment. And yeah, he's another one, you know, kind of looking forward to what's to come from him, really, because I'm sure there's quite a lot more as well.
Yeah, we'll be interesting to see where he does fit in with Arnie Slot as well. And I mean, another player who, despite all the struggles, has seemed to have, I don't think I'd ever fault Luis Diaz's effort recently, and you saw that again on Saturday. What would you make of this performance? Because I've seen real mixed reviews depending on what spin you want to put on it, so to speak, from his performance.
Yeah, I thought he played well again. I think he's been playing well recently. I think Liverpool's biggest problem is the collapse in attack recently, and the struggles they've kind of had at times there is the fact that I actually think Cody Gakpo and Luis Diaz have been playing quite well in this period. But obviously Gakpo misses Everton for reasons that are out of Liverpool's control. And the problem is that I don't think Cody Gakpo and Luis Diaz, even when they're playing well, are ever going to be your primary goal getters. So the loss of Jota to injury and the complete collapse in form of Nunes and Salah has been the biggest issue, really. You know, it's been helpful to have these two playing well, and they definitely have been doing, but you need the other ones. You need at least one of your three others who are the goal scorers out of the five to be playing well as well. And for all three to not be available or not be in form has been a real problem. But yeah, absolutely no issues with how Diaz is playing recently. I think he's looked really, really lively. He's been, you know, his dribbling's always been good, hasn't it? But he's been looked particularly dangerous. Again, you know, it is kind of an interesting decision to make over him this summer. I think it's fascinating, really, because there's that interest around him. Maybe Liverpool will think, you know, particularly with what's going on with Salah, what's going on with Nunes, do they need one more who's an absolute killer in the box, who's going to be available all the time? There's interest from PSG, his contract situation, he's in that sort of moment, really, where they either renew or they sell. If that PSG offer comes in, I think it gives them a real decision to make. But I think he's certainly not to blame for what's happened in recent weeks, because I actually think he's been playing quite well. But equally, is that enough to keep him around? I don't know. Difficult decision to make, I think, for Liverpool's recruitment staff. But I don't think it's a straightforward one where you say, well, he's actually been decent this season. There's no chance. I think the case either way could be made that he could stay or go. It's going to be an interesting one, that.
Yeah, no, you're right. Because he's been playing well. He beats a man. I think he creates like eight chances again. Sort of, you know, which he makes things happen. Probably the thing people will look at, and I know you've alluded to it before, it's that output scenario, isn't he? Because he misses two great chances again, and that's kind of what you almost think back to that City game, that for all he's got, it's will he be a killer at the right time? And you just have that question mark. And I know as well, you mentioned it before, like the PSG interest, the situation, it always takes me back to what you said a few weeks ago, or say months ago probably, it is around the Diaz camp, the feeling of the weather, how he sees it all. Is he the one out? Because everyone's talking about Salah, Nunes, which we'll get to shortly, but is he out the sort of starting front three or three main members of the front three? Is he the one you have got that biggest question mark over for those reasons?
Yeah, I think he's the one out of the five that I think it's most easy to make the case for leaving this summer, to be honest. You know, because of that reason that he isn't quite a killer, I think because of where his contract's up to as well, as I say, and there's already been rumours of interest in him, I just think it's easiest to make the case that he might be the one who leaves this summer than anyone else. And as I say, that's an interesting decision for Liverpool to make, I think. One thing I would say about him, and I think the same kind of goes for Gakpo, actually. I'd say the other three, Nunez are very up and down, but can be killers in theory. Jota, absolutely. And Salah, when he's in his, you know, when he's flying, he would no doubt be one of the best players in the world. But I think it's weird with Diaz. You need goal scorers to be in and around him and form when he's playing. Whereas I wonder if kind of Michael Edwards and Richard Hughes, the way they will see the game is, why are we giving ourselves that problem? Why not have five killers? You know, you look at the sort of traditional front three that Liverpool had that was built under sort of Michael Edwards and his recruitment staff. And it was, you had Firmino, who was signed really early in the process in 2015, was it? Who you would say wasn't a killer, but he obviously had brought an unbelievable amount. And then the rest of the options were Sadio Mane, goal scorer, basically a striker. Salah, goal scorer, basically a striker. They then added Jota, goal scorer, basically a striker. And the other option they had around that time was Origi, goal scorer. So the only one they had who wasn't an out-and-out goal scorer, and even though he actually did score a few, wasn't a prolific finisher, was Firmino.
Hello, I'm here to annoy you. I'm here to annoy you into listening to more of me and more of others on EPL Index. We don't just have the Anfield Index stuff. We've got EPL Index as well, which covers the entirety of the Premier League. And we have three podcasts and a whole bunch of really good writing on EPLindex.com. The podcasts are my own two-footed podcast, which is every day at 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, covering the whole league. We have A Tad Predictable, hosted by Tadiwa. You know Tadiwa, he does Anfield Index. He presents A Tad Predictable before every Premier League match week. And then Kevin DeVries and his crew on the EPL Roundtable, they're every week after the Premier League match week. So make sure you listen to everything we're doing on EPL Index and follow us there on Twitter at EPL Index. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I think they would always like their options to be weighted more towards that than not. Goal. You know, that's my personal view anyway, is that they just think very much get goal scorers in your team and you will win football matches rather than yes, but he gets the ball up the pitch. Yes, his defensive work. You know, the rest they can possibly think that they can work it out as they go. So Diaz doesn't really fall into that. And they've already got Gakpo, who's a bit kind of, again, not maybe a killer. So I just think they think because he's versatile, he can play everywhere. So he's got upside. So I just wonder whether they'll think Diaz, he's a nailed on left winger. He doesn't score prolifically. He's a worker, but we can probably replace that with someone who, you know, Sadio Mane worked his socks off and he was prolific. So, you know, I think they'll think that they can do something there. So, as I say, I think he wants to kind of keep an eye on going into this summer and a big decision to make, really.
Would make sense. I mean, as the stats show, one less goal contribution than Diogo Jota, which is maybe hard to measure him against, but in approximately 19 more games. So yeah, there's that to level up. And I know you kind of alluded to it, but we are trying to look at some positives from the game. There was real fight, actually, weren't we? It was the first time we'd seen Liverpool in a while. They did actually pen West Ham in for a good period, didn't they? They were really on top the second half.
Yeah, and I enjoyed that. I just thought, you know, as I say, you know, not a lot to play for, admittedly, but they still had that sort of spirit to come back. I mean, it's now 28 points from losing positions they've gained this season. So they've done that again, which I think shows that that element has not completely gone out. But they're obviously not flying at the moment. They're not incredibly in form. And that's why you get that sloppiness that leads to actually dropping points in the end. But yeah, no complaints whatsoever about the sort of spirit that was shown. And I don't, you know, I understand people are upset, but you're seeing comments like, you know, they've given up, they don't care anymore. And I never, ever buy into that a lot of the time, because I just think the professional footballers with standards, and that's even more true when you come to a club like Liverpool, that these aren't players who've given up. I think a few things have come together and sort of that. I think the injury crisis is a big one that's having a long-standing effect on this team. Also a bump in confidence that's come along with that. And what you're getting is this little, a poor finish to the season. But as I say, I can't emphasise enough that the 5 points behind Arsenal, who everyone thinks are the absolute dons at the moment, and don't get me wrong, they are sensational, but if they finish 5 points behind Arsenal, I would easily point to the injury crisis as the biggest difference between Liverpool and Arsenal over the course of the season. If they had similar, there would not be a 5-point gap there, I can assure you. So, you know, we've got to sort of keep that perspective going, that they're not very far away from what's going to end up being the champions or those top two anyway. I think the difference has just been that little bit of a drop off the basis of the injury crisis and not a case of giving up or bottling or any of those words people might want to take. They need to have fewer injury crises. That's absolutely something that the new manager has to deal with. That cannot keep happening, because it's been a theme. And so I'm not absolving anyone of blame, but for me, that's been the biggest difference to Liverpool. Not, as I say, a mental block or anything like that. I think, this is still a very, very good side as well, with a lot of good players that you can take forward into the new era. You shouldn't be throwing the baby out with the bathwater on the basis of this little poor run of form that they're in the minute. And as I say, the aim now for Liverpool really is to keep proving that, show that the mentality is still there and finish as close to Arsenal and Manchester City as possible, because that, you know, if you finish the season maybe, 6 points off the top, having endured all the injuries that Liverpool have had, having gone quite deep in all competitions as well, you can really look at that as, okay, one or two players here and we're absolutely going again. So I feel like people shouldn't allow the negativity of recent weeks to completely cloud the judgment and say, oh, well, I was right. This XYZ player is not good enough. And no, you know, this side is very, very close. It's got an extremely good young core as well that's coming through. So loads and loads of positives. Just we've got to detach this little run that they're in at the moment from the rest of the season as a whole and remind ourselves of the very good building blocks there at the moment.
I agree, because if you're just going to look at this run right now, we'd be predicting like 12th or 13th next season, wouldn't we, realistically? It'd just be like, we've got no chance of anything. But it's not, it is a bad period. And like you say, I get people will hang on to things like the wastefulness. No one's absolving them of anything in that regard. But the injuries, yeah, have played a big part. And even it seemed like yesterday, like you just thought, for Arsenal have been sensational. They have also been, people will say, lucky, well-prepared, planned, however you want to put it. But the difference is startling between the two, no doubts about it.
One thing I would say as well about Arsenal is Liverpool seriously need to think about this. And I think every football club in the Premier League needs to think about this. Set piece coach. I find it absolutely mad that, say, Liverpool hasn't got one. So a club that's been renowned for looking for the edge in recent years, you know, yeah. Some of the things that they've done, some of the people they've brought in to do talks to players, some of the work they've done with sort of the AI and things like that that's going on behind the scenes at Liverpool and stuff that they focus on recruitment as well, is they're so ahead of a lot of other clubs on that. Why they don't have a set piece coach, I don't understand. Because, and it sounds like you're doing Arsenal down when I say this. I'm absolutely not. I think they're brilliant. But they won the game yesterday on the basis of set pieces. They score two goals from corners and they win 3-2. You know, that is a 2-1 loss. So people talk about, oh, they played well, they were dominant. They actually weren't. You look at the numbers from the game, Tottenham had the chances. They were unlucky with the offside goal. So maybe even could have got a draw, but Arsenal win it because he scored two goals from set pieces. They are three goals from, it's almost like a separate sport completely. You know, take those out of the game, you know, and just analyse how the actual passages of play went and the actual game itself. You know, it could have been in Spurs' favour, but because Arsenal is so excellent in this one thing, they win a lot of games off the back of it. Or, you know, even the ones that you think, oh, well, they've won that 5-0, that's easy. But a lot of the time, their game-breaking goal, the one that makes it 1-0 or 2-0, is a set piece. And I find it mad that other clubs aren't focused on it or as focused on it, because, as I say, it's almost three goals. And I watched Bayern Munich against Arsenal and saw the way that they defended wide free kicks, and he brought the line up really, really high to defend it. So first contact was very, very high. And I just thought, you know, I thought Bayern did really well. And the biggest difference between them and Arsenal over the course of that tie is that they were probably largely evenly matched. But the best thing that they did is Bayern didn't give them a single free goal from a set piece. And I say free goal, it's they're brilliant at them. They're so well coached, the way they come up with the routines. But it is almost a free goal because it's completely separate to anything else that happens in the football game, and separate to the tactics, separate to all that. So I just think, you know, it's crazy to me. I think that's something Liverpool should absolutely look to do, because I think, you know, if you took those set pieces of goals away from Arsenal, they would be much lower down the table. And I think, you know, it's an edge that you can get. And why wouldn't you look to get it? Because Arsenal proved yesterday that's something that's kept them in the title race. Absolutely massive, really, to get that. And I think that's something that Liverpool should absolutely be looking at. And huge credit to Arsenal for realising that there's such a big part of the game. It's, you know, it's brilliant from the manager to do that.
Hello there. Have you ever found yourself getting ready to watch the Liverpool match? You've got your mates round, you've got your drinks, you've got your snacks. You're all set to go. It's going to be a good day. And then you find out, oh, the game's not actually being broadcast in your region. Does the heartbreak, there's rage, there's despair, there's fury, you're upset, you're looking for a solution. Well, we've teamed up with NordVPN to bring you a game-changing solution. That's right. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a country where the game's on live. It's like having a global ticket to sports, TV shows, and movies from all around the world. And here's the best part. If you go to nordvpn.com/Anfield Index, you'll score the best discount on your NordVPN plan. Plus, our link gives you 4 extra months free on the 2-year plan. And that's what we call a winning streak. And if you're sitting there and you're thinking, what if it's not for me? What if I don't like it? What if I'm not getting the use of it? Don't worry about it. There's a 30-day money-back guarantee, so it's totally risk-free. I've been using NordVPN to catch all the Liverpool matches and TV shows that I'd normally miss out on. It's totally transformed both my weekends and my TV watching. And not only that, not only does it give me access to stuff from all around the world with the click of a button, it keeps all my data safe. It means that the miscreants, the ne'er-do-wells, what my grandmother would have called scallywags, who lurk on the internet to try and steal your information, can't get your information. NordVPN keeps it safe for you. So don't let geo-restrictions bench you this season. Visit nordvpn.com/Anfield Index and make sure that you're in the game, no matter when or where it's being played. Remember, it's not just sports. It's your all-access pass to binge-worthy TV shows and blockbuster movies from all around the globe. NordVPN literally unlocks the world for you and keeps you safe from the world. So don't miss out. Head over to nordvpn.com/Anfield Index and let the fun and games begin.
No doubt. So there was a good article in The Athletic about Arsenal have got a set-piece coach. City have got one. Villa have got one, and Northern Irish Austin McPhee, and look who else is in the top four as well. But Liverpool don't, especially like you said, for a team that's used AI, especially we think to the penalty techniques, the shootouts, the work they've done as well. It does seem a bit strange. It will be interesting to see if that gets corrected next season, if that's the right phrase. And talking points, there were a few in this game, and I can see why people are going on about these. It's interesting, so I'll get your take on the two. The first one, it didn't get a card, but it got a foul. Paqueta on McAllister, that foot, you know, and people are linking it to, I know you've seen this, the Curtis Jones, and people will bring that up. Honest thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I don't know if it was quite as bad as the Curtis Jones one, in the sense of you see the buckle in the ankle from the Curtis Jones one is much more severe, so I can see why the referral happens in that case. This isn't quite as forceful, I would argue. But equally, I think if there'd been a red card on the pitch, probably doesn't get overturned. So it's one of those that's on the line. I think the disappointment is he doesn't at least get a yellow, does he? Which, you know, I think on the pitch should be given. But then obviously VAR can't intervene in yellow cards. So a bit disappointing with that one. But, you know, I just think it's so many of these happen that they're right on the line. VAR involvement or not, and sometimes you get them, sometimes you don't. You know, if he gives a red on the pitch, I don't think. Well, I say absolutely no chance it gets overturned. So annoying, really. And I think McAllister, he kind of gets a few of these. Actually, he sort of always seems to be involved in those 50-50s and cops for a few fouls in those situations. So, you know, I feel for him a little bit around that, because he just sort of seemed to get a kick in really throughout games. And yeah, could easily have been a red really, that one. And fortunate for West Ham that it wasn't really, and frustrating for Liverpool. But I guess at the end of the day, I don't think it would have decided the game in Liverpool's favour. But equally, I think they would have just liked to have played better and to not concede in the way that they had across the game. And if you look after that, the referee and stuff will look after itself a lot of the time.
True. And probably the one that's drawn most scrutiny is, I don't know how to describe it, it's the incident with Cody Gakpo, isn't it, where the keeper's hurt, people are like, did Anthony Taylor blow, all that type of, there's been a lot of discussion around this, and were rules applied, were they not, etc. What's your take on this one?
Yeah, so my understanding of it is that basically the referee gives an advantage when Areola hits the post. I think he believes he was shoved into the post. I've not exactly watched that moment back to know whether that is absolutely correct or not. But whatever happened, he in theory gives the foul, gives the advantage. And so when Areola throws the ball out then, I think that the referee thinks, well, the advantage isn't given because Cody Gakpo then comes to close the ball down. So the advantage has been compromised effectively. So that's why he blows his whistle, really. And I just think it's one of those, great if he taps it. I mean, Cody Gakpo probably deserves criticism for don't ask the ref, just go and tap the ball in.
Whack in, yeah.
Yeah, and then we'll have a discussion about it after. But also, I just think, you know, it reminds me of the Gabriel moment in the Bayern Munich game where he puts his hand on the ball to take the goal kick, having not realised the goal kick was taken. Do we really want to see these little technicalities punished in that way? I personally, no. I don't think there's I think the referee's kind of it's the kind of thing where we'd say show a bit of common sense from the ref, and then they do show a bit of common sense, like Anthony Taylor. Okay, well, I'll just blow for the free kick here, you know, and then we criticise them for it. I just don't think we want to see goals scored in that way on technicalities where, you know, oh, he's overplayed the advantage or whatever. I just don't really believe that at all. I'm not a big fan of that, or, you know, misunderstanding of what's gone on. It just, yeah, not for me that was a hugely controversial moment. And if Liverpool really feel like they've been robbed there, I think they should have just played better, to be honest.
Yeah, it's that whole sort of letter of the law against the spirit of the law, isn't it?
Exactly.
We're going to start enforcing it. And I get it. The one thing I would have liked to have done is just seen Cody Gakpo stick it in the net and then let's have a conversation. We can debate it then, type of thing. But do you know what? At the end of the day, it doesn't really change much. And I suppose, like you said, they could have played better. We're trying to look to positives. I mean, I think barring a 29-goal swing now, isn't it, from Spurs, and we've got to play them as well. Liverpool are qualified for Champions League. That is the big positive to take, isn't it, going forward?
100%. I mean, I had someone, a guy I know, tweeting me on Saturday saying, you know, oh, well, and I'm a little bit worried about top four. And then 24 hours later, it was absolutely sealed. And actually, it would have been sealed early. It would have been sealed before even yesterday had Chelsea not had that goal disallowed late on. So. You know, it was never, ever in doubt that 75 points is going to be enough. And obviously, I think Liverpool will pick up more than 0 points over the next three games as well. But, you know, I think it's crazy, really, kind of, you know, people are disappointed. But I think if Liverpool had had a slightly worse start to the season and then sort of finished strongly, then everyone has said, wow, top four, probably top three even, to not too far away from the title race, win a trophy as well. Fantastic season in what was viewed as a bit of a transitional season or whatever. I mean, I actually don't kind of quite buy into the transition season stuff, because I think the only reason they had to rebuild the midfield in one go is because they left it so long. So Liverpool deserves some blame around that, to be honest. And, you know, the idea that once your midfielders had settled in at the start of the season, you shouldn't really have any big issues about this being a transitional season, because are we saying this is a transitional season? Next summer, if they have to, this summer coming, if you have to sign three or four, that's a transit. I don't buy into that at all. I think the biggest excuse, so to speak, that Liverpool have had is the injuries, really, and that is absolutely why they've not continued that title charge. But I still think at the start of the season, if you offered, you know, comfortable top three, part of the title race until late, another trophy on board, which is brilliant. I think a lot of people would have taken that, and like I say, the aim now is to finish as close to the title winners as possible, and you know that'll really provide a platform to do more next season. And I think you have to just take out the negativity of recent weeks and reflect on that as a, you know, really, really good effort. And the idea now is to build on that and to be able to build on that with Champions League football to offer, particularly as the new man is maybe not as much of a pull as a Klopp would be. I think that's helpful to say, look, we're consistently a Champions League side. We're back in it. We're ready to go again. I think, it's massive for the club, isn't it?
No doubt. And there was a good tweet I saw, a random one, that the way this season finishes, it was a great analogy. It's not mine, but someone said, imagine you took like a point at the Etihad, but you conceded a last minute sloppy equaliser to throw away 3 points. The cold light of day says it's a good point, but you're disappointed. And that's kind of how this season finishes a little bit, because of the end. You probably would have taken it at the start of last season, because remember how bad last season was. But now you're looking at this like, what could have been? That's kind of a fair analogy, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's kind of like, say, the 2020-21 season where Liverpool steal into the Champions League at the death is almost like scoring a last-minute equaliser at home to Luton. Yeah. It's obviously, you'd be disappointed with that result, but if you score in the 95th minute to grab a point, then you're just saying, oh, well, it's not a bad point in the end. We pinched it at last. So it's kind of, it's how you see things, isn't it? And sort of how they feel. And it's hard to shake off that disappointment because it's been a bit of a collapse recently. But ultimately, as I say, the season's aims have been achieved, not too far away from the title race either, because I think I wouldn't be happy if it was a million miles away from that, because I think you've got a huge gap to make up. Whereas Liverpool, they don't look a million miles away. They need to not have an injury crisis next season. That'd be a good start. They probably need to make a couple of tweaks to the squad, but nothing massive. And if they do that, I think they'll be banged back in title contention, assuming that Arne Slot is a you know, a top level manager. I mean, we've got to learn about that as well. So that adds a question mark. But to be not too far away at the moment, he's got a really, really good foundation that he's coming into. And yeah, let's not lose sight of that.
No doubts. And it seems right to steer to him because, I mean, we did the pod. Everyone's been talking about it. It's almost a strange one in the sense of journalists like yourself. There've been so many stories, isn't it? That it's all done. It's all been talk about what the compensation amount is, who's following in, like in terms of roles, people. What is kind of the latest details on this? Because naturally there's a worry, is the club just going to be silent till the end of the season? Because there's more news almost from the Feyenoord side and the Dutch side, isn't there, than there is here at the moment?
Yeah, I had a conversation a couple of days ago that made me think I'd be kind of surprised if there was any confirmation before the end of the season now.
Right,
there's certainly no plans to fly slot in to do anything on Merseyside between now and the end of the season. That's absolutely guaranteed. So I think that makes me think, in additional to that, that the idea that, you know, there's no plans for an announcement at the moment. That makes me think that they'll probably just wait till the summer, wait till the season's finished, get him over, do the whole interview, do all the club media, everything like that. You know, the deal is in place now. No worries about that. But in terms of confirmation, and I understand that, by the way, because it's, you know, he's got to want to, you know, leave Feyenoord in a good way.
Yeah.
You know, and do that. And also, you know, the idea of having him around the training ground while Jürgen's there just doesn't feel right, does it? So I think, you know, and the players have got to focus on a good finish to the season as well. That's what they want to do, and finish this Jürgen Klopp era in the right way. So I think there's going to be a delay on that club announcement. I'd be certainly surprised if there's any real change in that. And as I said, don't think Slot will be coming over here. There's definitely no plans for that. So maybe we're going to have to wait till the end of the season for a firm announcement. But that, as I say, I think in the situation, that kind of makes a lot of sense, really.
Hey, guys, it's Eddie Gibbs from Anfield Index here. I hope you're enjoying this podcast, and I'm sorry to call time on the show before it ends. In the current climate, it's tougher than ever before to offer podcasts for free. At Anfield Index, we produce over 75 free shows every month, which I'm confident is unparalleled in the LFC sphere. Whilst we'd love to offer everything for free, the production costs now make this impossible. That said, we don't want to follow the model of other channels and lock all of our content behind a paywall. So what we've decided to do is to continue offering every show for free, but cut that offering to 30 minutes on our longer shows. So to get all of our shows in full and enjoy the best of everything we have to offer, we really hope you'll consider supporting the channel and signing up at AnfieldIndexPro.com. For about the price of one cup of coffee, you'll get every podcast in full with zero ads. You'll also get access to our LFC VIP community, where you can enjoy live podcasts, engage with our podcasters, and chat with other Reds in real time. So that website again, AnfieldIndexPro.com. Join today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.